morning, everybody. Oh, my gosh. I was just saying I ate a great big piece of lemon meringue pie, and on top of everything else I've stuffed my face with today, I'm ready for nap number 5. I hope that all of you have had just a delightful, wonderful, blessed Thanksgiving today, and that tonight you're relaxing and maybe enjoying someone that you really care about and love. I know so many of the folks that I work with during the week at my other job as a clinician always sort of dread the holidays because they have to be with family, and I'm hoping that you are with family and friends that you treasure and love. This is Dr. Carla Wills Brandon, and you are listening to A Walk to the Other Side. For the next hour, we will be talking about spirit apparitions, encounters, and other types of spirit contact. Interestingly, a lot of folks make contact with their loved ones on the other side right around the holidays. That's not an uncommon happening. As a matter of fact, I was in town in Asheville. I'm in Asheville, North Carolina. I'm not in on Galveston Island. I'm actually way up in the mountains, high in the Smoky Mountains of North Carolina. And I came down out of the mountains and went into the city and was talking to somebody who shared with me about an after-death communication that they had recently had with a loved one. And they talked about how wonderful it was to have this contact during the holidays. So anyway, I'm sitting here in a little cabin in the middle of the woods. And gang, if it were not for this potbelly stove, I'd be freezing my tuchus off. Now, for those of you who don't know what a tuchus is Yiddish for your booty. It's very cold up here. 4 times a year, I escape the island. I leave Galveston Island. And I head north up to the mystical Appalachian Mountains. And every Thanksgiving, my family and I, we get a break from the tourists who are flooding the island. And so here I am. I'm sitting here right now, and I'm looking out upon 8 acres. I'm in what's called a holler. A holler is actually a little valley. And up above me is a huge mountain. And the sky is absolutely brilliant. We had snow, and all that has blown out, and so now the sky is crystal clear, and if I was a brave soul, I'd go outside with a down sleeping bag, and I'd go lay on my back, and I'd go look up at the stars, but right now, with this full stomach of mine, I don't think I'm going to go do that. Maybe sometime in the future, we'll broadcast this show from the top of the mountain. I'll climb up to the top of the mountain, and I'll take a phone, a cell phone, or a wireless or something and give you a mystical perspective from the top of the Smoky Mountains. Actually, the highest mountain on the east of the Mississippi is right in my backyard, Mount Mitchell, but unfortunately we tried to get up there today, and there was no way we were going to get up there. They've got it all closed down, but I can see the snow up on top of the mountain. But anyway, I'm going to sit here and look at the stars while I talk to you and just sort of enjoy the evening. This cabin, actually, that we have, this cabin is ancient. It belonged, the last couple who owned it, they were authentic Appalachian mountain people. Now, Appalachian mountain people, they have no problem with things that are mystical, after-death communications, near-death experiences, parting visions of the dying. These sort of things are part of their cultural. And so it figures I'd end up in a place like this with a second home. I can't just live on an island where I'm not far from Cajun country and from the land of voodoo and interesting happenings on the Gulf Coast. But then I have to, my second home has to be way up in the mountains where mountain people have been looking at the supernatural since time began. So anyway, this cabin, it belonged to a couple of original mountain people, and actually the land, the property dates back to the Civil War, and when we first bought this place, the elderly man who had died just months before this, I mean, we just stumbled across this property, and it was just an incredible deal, and it had incredible energy, and so we went ahead and we bought it. Well, when we first bought this property, I really do believe the spirit of the elderly man who had lived here for over 50 years was still hanging around. And as a matter of fact, every time we come back for a day or two, I still can feel his energy. And it's not a frightening energy. What was I, on television, they have all of these, you know, supernatural shows on. I'm not going to name them specifically, but they're paranormal shows. And I was sitting with my son, my oldest son, who's going to be 20, and he was watching one of those 20 to 25-year-old stations where they have shows that are geared toward that age group. And there was a show on that will remain anonymous, and it was making a presentation of spirituality. I just started cracking up. And there were apparitions, and people were seeing spirits and making contact. And it was presented in a really frightening way. And I sat there and I looked at my son and I said, you know, that's not the way it really is. And he looked at me and he said, it's not. This isn't the way it is. Well, on this show it's the way it is. And I said, honey, that's not the way it is. But anyway, I really do believe that the previous owner of this little cabin, he stops by just to see what, you know, what we're doing to his house now. I'm one of these folks, I like to get a hold of a really old, broken-down piece of property. And what I like to do for fun, I like to restore old furniture, and I like to restore really old, dilapidated houses, because the energy of the people who lived in these houses before, the history, I have the deeds for this house that date all the way back to the mid-1700s, and I've got them framed. And they're up on the wall in the sitting room. And I have a handwritten divorce decree. By one of the a husband decided that he wanted to divorce his wife, and he was going to hand the property over to his daughter and his son-in-law, and he was going to give it to them lock, stock, and barrel if they would take care of his ex-wife. So I have that up on the wall. But, you know, these older houses, they just have so much spiritual energy in them. And contrary to Hollywood, it's not frightening, haunted spiritual energy. Now, don't get me wrong. I do think that every once in a while there are spirits who hang around. A couple of weeks ago, I told you about my 100-year-old office house that I had and about the old guy who was appearing to my clients. I have clients who come to see me for relationship problems or addiction problems or sex problems, trauma problems, veterans of war. And so these are folks who come in and they just want to get themselves straightened out a little bit. And lo and behold, a wrench is thrown into the whole mess when this guy who was in the house, my office house, the spirit, would materialize. Scare them to death. Well, yeah, once in a blue moon you have somebody, some personality who was not very nice in the physical, and then they go over to the other side, and what, they're going to sprout rings and walk down a golden road and play a harp, and all of a sudden a good angel is going to tap them on the head and they're going to be relieved of all their defects of character? No, it doesn't work that way. But you know, for the most part, the energy of an individual sometimes does stay around an old house, and that's what we've got here up in the Appalachian Mountains. And as a matter of fact, in our backyard, there's a creek, and there are some bears, and we have some wild turkeys, and you should see my old hound dog. My old hound dog, when he gets the scent of a bear, he bolts in here and he runs behind the potbelly stove and we can't drag him out to save our lives. And then, interestingly, halfway up the mountain is a Chihuahua graveyard. You think I'm kidding? I kid you not. I'm huffing and puffing. So I try to, at least once a day, I'll walk all the way down the mountain and go do some errands, or I'll go walk down the other side of the mountain. And I'll run into some of these older folks who, you know, they got their mountain walking stick and they've got their boots on, and they're just walking up and down the mountains. And so what this woman used to do is she would walk down the mountain to the cemetery. Now, to the cemetery, it takes about 15 minutes down the mountain. And they have some incredible old graves over there, and I really want to go take some pictures at that cemetery. I have taken some pictures at a couple of other cemeteries around here at night. I've got to get the film developed, and I'll give you an update on that. But anyway, she would walk down the mountain, and she'd collect plastic flowers off the graves. Then she would climb back up the mountain, and she'd place the flowers on the graves of her beloved pups. We all grieve in different ways, and for some of us, letting go is really hard to do. And for this woman, her pets were her children. And so up on that mountain, my sons and I, what we did is we went up there and we cleaned the Chihuahua graveyard up a couple of years ago. And I do believe the spirits of those beloved pets are now with their master, who cared for them as if they were her children. In my last book, A Glimpse of Heaven, I went ahead and I put a whole chapter in that book on apparitions, spirit contact with beloved pets. Because I do believe that pets, just like us, just like every other living entity on this planet, there's that little shard of spiritual light. And so for this woman, my hope is that when she passed on, all of her pet chihuahuas were there for her. But like Galveston Island, the people of the Appalachian Mountains, they tend to be a real spiritual bunch. Now, on the other side of the mountain, there is a little white church. And let me tell you something. When these churchgoers start talking in tongues, yes, they do, and it's right next to a cemetery where I took some pictures just this week. At sunset, I want to see if I can pick up some orbs. But when these folks, when they start talking in tongues, these Appalachian Mountain people, who they come down and they all show up for church, it's a really big deal, and they're at church 3 to 4 times a week, and that's where they socialize, and that's where they get their tools for living life, and it's very serious for them. But you can hear them all the way down the mountain. 15 minutes away from my little cabin is Nashville. Now, Asheville is, most people don't know this, but Asheville is sort of a New Age Mecca, and that's a recent happening. When I came to Asheville, I'd say 15 to 20 years ago, there wasn't a whole lot here. I mean, there was Biltmore Estates, and there were some deadhead hippies, and there were, of course, some mountain people. They were way up in the mountain, and these mountain people, the women had hair down to the back of their knees, wore gingham dresses, and the men, we're talking overalls and chewing tobacco and the whole shabam. Well, it's not that way anymore in Asheville. You might say that Asheville is the Taos, New Mexico of the South. Believe it or not, the town is full of psychics. We've got their shingles hung out all over the place, and we've talked about psychics. Some psychics are the real deal, and a bunch of so-called psychics are not the real deal. But then there are healers and mediums, and someday we'll talk about the difference between mediums and psychics. And then there's all sorts of alternative health practices here. So it's a great place to visit if you've never been here before. And you want to take a trip and go someplace a little different. If you've been to Taos, New Mexico, and Santa Fe, New Mexico, and Sedona, and some of those other, I hate that word, New Age, but I don't know what else to say, conscious awareness areas of the state, come on down to Asheville. I mean, from Asheville Magazine, that's a magazine that actually, I mean, I just discovered this magazine. It's devoted totally to Appalachian spirituality and healing. What they say is that people from so-called New Age places like Sedona, Arizona, Santa Cruz, that's my old stomping ground, California. California and Marin County or Boulder, Colorado. I used to go up to Boulder, Colorado a lot. Maui, Seattle, as well as many from Florida and from all over the country. There, folks are flocking to Asheville. I mean, like they're like flocking here. It's amazing. It's impossible in this small space to list all the holistic, metaphysical, and spiritual organizations that are in the Asheville area. They have an incredible EVP conference. EVP is the technique of recording messages from deceased with tape recorders, and some people pick up messages on their computers, and we're going to talk a little bit about that later. But anyway, there are hundreds of meditation places and a lot of folks who are into UFOs, paranormal gatherings. You got a whole slew of pagans up here and other groups. And, I mean, there's just this is just a few minutes outside of Asheville in any direction. We'll place you in the loving embrace of nature on some mountaintop with somebody talking to their deceased grandfather. Also, there's a place called Grandfather Mountain that's not far from here. And there's a town below Grandfather Mountain called Cherokee. And there are real Cherokee Indians who are in Cherokee. And Cherokee, the town itself, is a bit touristy, but the Indians who live around there, they still practice the old ways. And so a couple of times a year in the summer, I go up to Grandfather Mountain and hike around and go to Cherokee and see what folks are up to. But many of these New Age seekers have moved into log cabins with no telephone or television or other connections. As a matter of fact, there's a guy not far from here. I mean, this boy, he is really living in the rough. He's making his own clothes. He's growing his own food. He's it's like the hippie communes of the 60s. And there are still, as I said, some Cherokees who live on the land. They live in tents, and they even live in teepees. So it's a very, very interesting place to visit. Now, if you have a comment to share with me or the audience, I'm going to encourage you to call toll-free 1-888-268-4313. For international calls, dial 281-419-7617. Or you can email me directly at drsbrandon, D-R-S-B-R-A-N-B-O-N, at sbcglobal.net. Or just plug my name into your search engine, Carla Wills Brandon. It'll take you straight to my site. But anyway, so here I am. I've got this great little cabin that's up in the mountains. And, of course, I would not go to some – I can't stand vacations that involve antiseptic tourist trap places. I have to go someplace where there's rich culture and there's a sense of open-mindedness. And so here I am in another spirit-filled environment where people talk openly about otherworldly tenants living in their homes. So, as most of you know, I've talked to you about living in Galveston and how there are folks who have pictures of ghosts on their walls, and they talk about the orbs floating down the stairs, and for them it's just not a big deal at all. It's just a part of life, and nobody gets too upset. And, well, here I am again in another state, in another place, and down the mountain is a house that was built in the late 1800s, and this house belongs to a really good friend of mine. And the house has a couple of very playful spirits upstairs, and so, of course, last year I had to run down the hill and take pictures as soon as my girlfriend told me that she felt like, they were hearing footsteps running up and down the stairs, and they were hearing laughter up in one of the bedrooms, and they had seen a few orbs, so I ran down there and I took some pictures. But every July 4th, my girlfriend and her husband was the president of the old-time music crowd, and so every 4th of July, all the old-time musicians from across the South gather at my girlfriend's house for jam sessions. Let me tell you something. honey. They come from Tennessee. They come from North Carolina, South Carolina. They all show up. So she puts out an invite on the old-timey musicians list, and here they all come. And so every year we all get together, and as the fireworks blast overhead, there's fiddle music and banjos and mountain dulcimers and guitar, and these notes can be heard all over the mountain. Now, I play very poorly the dulcimer, the mountain dulcimer. So usually I just kind of sit in the background and I listen. These musicians are just incredible, and it's just so much fun. And as if that weren't enough, all that wonderful, incredible music, those of us who explore the other side, the afterlife, what we do is we seek each other out every single year, and we gather in small groups to talk about what we've seen lately. So what I look forward to, aside from a lot of homemade fudge, there's this one woman from Tennessee who makes the most awesome homemade fudge, and then the cherry pie, and then my friend who pulls this thing together, he is a five-star chef, so we're always in for a treat when we go to eat at their house. I like meeting up with one of the gardeners from the Biltmore Estate. That's what I look forward to. So after listening to music and after stuffing my face, and I go looking to see if this gardener has shown up. Now, this gardener, he's a real interesting guy, and I'm not going to use his name because I don't have permission to do that, but he has shared with me that he comes from a family of mediums. And he says that the ability to communicate with the other side in his family can be traced through the generations. And I do believe that there is something to this. My sister is capable of seeing auras, so am I. My sister is capable of making contact with the other side sporadically, so am I. My mother was very involved in investigating contact with the other side. She was very interested in UFOs and things of that nature. And as a matter of fact, when she passed at the very early age of 38, she was not frightened. She was more concerned about how her death was going to be impacting everybody else, which is not uncommon. Oftentimes, the dying will not talk about dying because they are afraid that if they do talk about dying, it's going to upset us. And her father, my grandfather, he was a character. He used to sit outside at night drinking a beer, and he was waiting for the UFOs to land in the backyard. So I do think that these sorts of, some people have blue eyes, some people have brown eyes, some people are tall, some people are short. I think all of us have the ability to make contact with the other side. I think that some of us are, I don't know if it's environment. I don't know if it's genetic. But anyway, my friend the gardener says that within his family system, the ability to make contact with the other side is incredibly prevalent. So this gardener has seen a few apparitions at Biltmore Estates, and he isn't the only one. The Biltmore Estates are just incredible. That's something you should definitely go check out if you ever come to Asheville, North Carolina. From the website of Fuel Girl, somebody named Fuel Girl, I found this. And I thought it was an interesting experience with regard to somebody making contact at the Biltmore Estates. But anyway, just before I share that with you, the Vanderbilts. These are the folks who built the Biltmore Estates, and they built the Biltmore Estates back in 1914. Now, George Vanderbilt, he died from complications from surgery. He had an appendicitis, so he died. My great-grandmother died about 10 years after, somewhere around that. Well, she died, too. Back then, people could have surgeries, and one little thing went wrong, and it was a trip to the other side. You weren't going to be hanging around. But anyway, his wife was extremely upset. So what Mrs. Vanderbilt would do, here, she and her husband, they had built this beautiful estate, gorgeous, gorgeous place. entertained all sorts of celebrities, intellectuals, and then he dies and she's by himself. She's by herself. So late at night, what she would do is she would go to the library, and she would sit in front of a large marble fireplace, and she would have talks with her husband. Now, a lot of widows and widowers, they talk to their deceased partner. That's not uncommon. And, you know, I wonder if she was receiving after-death communications from her husband. Well, anyway, several years ago, an elderly gentleman I know lost his wife. He loved her to pieces. Now, this guy was not a follower of the New Age movement, and it had been years since he stepped foot in a church. He had always been the ill one in the relationship, and he and his wife thought he would be the one to go first. This is an example. I wanted to share this example with you because this is an example of widows and widowers and what happens when one of them passes on. Just to kind of lead into the whole Biltmore estate story. But anyway, they had made plans for his funeral and they had a will, but in the end, guess what happened? She died. She died before he did. This isn't the Vanderbilt story. This is another story. This is something that, I mean, I just had a conversation with this guy. But she died suddenly, and he was just totally devastated. And so to aid him in his recovery and grief, his 90-something-year-old mother moved in with him. I don't know if that was such a good idea. I mean, I'm mad at her. She's kind of a battle axe. But anyway, his grief intensified. And he started going downhill health-wise. It's not uncommon if you know elderly couples, if they're really, really close, it's not uncommon for one to pass away and then maybe a few months later the other one passes away. That's not uncommon at all. So anyway, his health started going down. And, you know, his wife actually had been a nurse, and so she had taken care of him nutritionally and medication-wise. This is a guy who couldn't even boil water. I mean, she'd basically been his best friend, and so he missed her terribly. And when I visited him, he was not in good shape the first time I visited him. And I was concerned because he didn't really have a sense of spirituality, and but he was incredibly depressed, and his health was bad, and his family had asked me to talk with him because they were concerned about him. Well, the next time I talked to him, he perked up a little bit. He didn't seem so gray and depressed, and he seemed a little more upbeat. And I asked him, well, what's going on here? And he said, well, I've started to catch glimpses of my wife in different parts of the house, and so I'm talking to her. And it's very comforting to know that she's still watching over me. He started having after-death communications with his deceased wife. And as I said, this was, you know, when I started working with this family, this was a guy, we're talking blue-collar, the whole family is blue-collar, didn't know a thing about the New Age movement, no interest in the New Age movement, no books on the New Age movement, and his wife all of a sudden dies, and he gets into a funk, and, you know, I really do believe that we can unconsciously will the body to die. If we are seriously, seriously feeling very glum and depressed and as if there's nothing else to live for. And I know that there are some researchers at the University of Texas Medical Branch who investigate this. And they talk about turning on the death clock where there's just no desire to carry on. And I really do believe that that's what this guy had done until he started having, he had visual communication with his deceased wife. And you know, last I heard, he's doing fine, and he still talks to her, and talks to his deceased wife, and seems to be doing really, really well. And so, you know, I kind of wonder if maybe that's not what was going on at the Biltmore Estates, that Mrs. Vanderbilt was talking to her deceased husband, and if that maybe brought her some comfort. I mean, I have a friend who is a cardiologist, and he is a near-death experience researcher. He's a wonderful character. Plug his name into your search engine. His name is Dr. Jeffrey Long. And he has also, he was a board member for the International Association of Near-Death death research. So he's just a really good guy. He's a cardiologist, as I said. Aside from investigating near-death experiences, he also has been investigating after-death communications, and he has some great statistics on his website. And he's somebody I go to when I start digging into different types of research, because he just has a wealth of information. But anyway, he has some really interesting stats on those who have reported after-death communications with loved ones. Like, for instance, in 1958, now I want you to just notice the stats. In 1958, in England, 50% of the widows reported that they made contact with their husbands after they died. In 1971, 47% of the widows in Wales said that they made contact with their deceased partners. Now, in 1975, I thought this was really curious. In 1975, only 27% of those widowed in the States reported that they made contact with their deceased partner. What does that tell us about our population? Andrew Greeley is a sociologist. He also is a priest. And he writes, he's a wonderful novelist. He writes great books. But he did a huge study of this nature. And I remember looking at some of his stats, and they're very interesting, because it seems that in other parts of the world, there's much more acceptance with regard to owning and talking about making contact with the other side. In the States, we're still a little behind the time. He also did a little research on his own, too. He analyzed 238 individuals who they contributed to his after-death communication website. He has two websites. He has one for after-death communications, and then he has one for near-death experiences. But with regard to his after-death communication website, he found some pretty interesting things with regard to the relationship between the deceased and the person reporting the after-death communication. And what he found, he broke this down, he found that 46 of the contacts occurred within 46 out of the 238. That was his core group of folk. Well, out of those 238 folk, the 46 who owned having contact said they had contact within 24 hours of a passing. Now, remember a couple of weeks ago, I talked to you about how my husband had come into our sitting parlor and he saw his father sitting there the very next morning, the day after he passed. Also at my father-in-law's residence, there were a couple of other people who reported to us that they had seen my father-in-law. That was within a 24-hour period. Now, he also discovered that 35 of these people, 35 of the 46, contacted, that the contact was made between blood relatives. So there's something about family. This is the season when we're with family, gang. But there's something about family. We have bonds with family that transcend life and death. But anyway, back at the Biltmore, we started this whole conversation out talking about Mrs. Vanderbilt, her conversations with her dearly departed husband in the library. Well, anyway, needless to say, her servant started to think she was losing her mind. But to this day, late at night, the staff says that you can still hear her voice speaking very softly to her husband, George. Also, they say that they can feel George's presence in the billiard room and the second floor oak sitting room. Now, let me tell you something very interesting. There are certain parts in all of the old houses that I have lived in or worked in, there's always that one room, that has an interesting feel to it. One of the rooms in this old cabin is on the far side, and I can really feel a presence in there every once in a while. In my house in Galveston, I can feel a presence on the sun porch. In the house in League City, city that was my office, the 100-year-old house. I could feel a presence on the stairs. Some people talk about cold spots where they'll feel a chill. And if you remember when I shared with you several weeks ago, when I saw my relatives and spirit energy form, the temperature in the room really dropped. And people who are paranormal investigators who go and investigate places where there's a lot of spirit activity, they actually have tools for measuring drops in temperature. They've got all these great shows on television on, like, not the major channels where they have the paranormal shows that are Hollywood souped up, but there are some of these shows where they have these individuals who go into these places where there's spirit activity, and they'll have some guy measuring the temperature of the room. But anyway, it looks like George really does like the second floor oak sitting room. That seems to be one of his favorite rooms. During rainy late nights, George supposedly would sit and he would read there. So workers report feelings of being watched. Have you ever had that sensation? You're alone in the house and you have a sensation that there's somebody else in there, and you turn around and nobody's there. Maybe you have a pet. My cat would always get really uncomfortable in one of the rooms in my house in Galveston. And that's usually it would occur around the time when there would be the rose smell. Last week I told you about the rose smell that pops up in my house in Galveston sometimes. But there was a sense of being watched. Some of the workers have seen apparitions. They've heard voices, laughing. They've seen apparitions in the gardens and in the bass pond. And there's a pool room, and that seems to be a focal point of unexplained events. And the sound of people swimming echoes throughout the entire lower floor in the middle of the night. There can sometimes people hear laughter, and it's said to be haunted by a lady in black. Now, I asked my friend the gardener about this. He didn't know anything about this. What he usually does is he'll see some orbs, or he'll hear some laughter, or he'll hear footsteps running up and down the stairs. But like I said, Asheville and the Appalachians, there are just all sorts of stories about some of the spiritual happenings that take place around here. From the Renegade Rumor Mill, we hear that there have been several reports that have come in from people hearing the sound of drums coming from the protective Native American burial ground on the Biltmore Estate property. This was actually a news report that they had in their newspaper, believe it or not. But anyway, the county sheriff was sent to investigate the calls. Folks were reporting ghostly figures dancing around, ghostly fires, complete drums and songs. And they also reported that if they did not try to interact with the ghostly apparitions, the apparitions went on as if they weren't even there. So anyway, the Biltmore Estate is a wonderful place to visit. I've been there several times. At Christmas time, it's beautiful. They light it all up with candles. Go check it out. There's also another wonderful old hotel in Asheville that I've been to on numerous occasions. I absolutely love it. It's called the Grove Park Inn. And I need to go to the Grove Park Inn and take pictures. But usually what happens when I go to the Grove Park Inn is I go out there with my camera in my purse, and I get so caught up in the architecture and the history and the scenery that I forget that I have the camera in my purse. I don't take any pictures. But anyway, it was also, as I said, it's in Asheville, and it was built by E.W. Grove in 1913. And the Grove Park Inn has seen some famous faces, and there's a huge list of them. I mean, Thomas Edison, like Hunky, like the Grove Park Inn, and Henry Ford, and Franklin D. Roosevelt, Richard Nixon, Dan Aykroyd, and a whole slew of celebrities, scholars, and politicians. And there are lots and lots of stories that have been provided by the guests with regard to apparitions of a woman in pink. Now, in Galveston, we have at Ashton Villa, we have the woman in white, and here at Grove Park Inn, we have the woman in pink. And here late 1910s or the early 1920s, a young woman wearing a long pink gown was staying at the hotel. Her room was in the Palm Court. It was so pretty there. The core of the main inn, where six levels of rooms encircle a spacious drop to the lounge below. And it is a drop, let me tell you. And the inside, it's all stone. The whole thing is stone. It's just incredible. My sister-in-law stayed there last summer, so we got to hang out again. It is said that the young lady somehow fell to her death from there. Now, we're not talking a little teeny drop here. It's like falling off the top of a tall building inside. No one knows whether her fall was an accident, murder, or suicide. But ever since the event supposedly occurred, employees and guests have been reporting unexplainable phenomena throughout the historical building. So people see orbs, and there are all sorts of apparitions. And since the first documented occurrence around 1940, people have encountered everything from a pink phantom gliding through the hotel to a rash of mischievous and unexplained events. Remember I told you last week that when my father-in-law passed, that he was such a jokester, that what he would do, he would turn the radio up loud. I'd go downstairs, and I'd turn it down, and he'd turn it up, and then pictures would fall off the wall, and then I shared with you about my next-door neighbor who would, his alarm would go off in the middle of the night. We'd have to go over there and turn it off. And, I think a lot of times spirit, what they like to do is they like to, if they were mischievous and playful on this side, they're going to be mischievous and playful on the other side. So some of them will play with electrical equipment. Occurrences range from small events such as moving objects around, doors of vacant rooms being locked from the inside, elevators being buzzed to empty floors, typewriters typing by themselves, to large events like Delman being physically pushed by invisible forces, and every guest room lit light and the empty hotel turned on at once. The witness list includes people from all walks of life, from bellmen and maids to doctors and chiefs of police, although in the most extreme encounters, employees have quit their jobs and guests have been moved to different rooms. The occurrences are always, they're not malicious, but, in our culture, gang, we're still so afraid of things that go bump in the night. For years, hotel administration forbid its employees to gossip about the ghostly encounters, unsure of how the public would react. And on November of 1995, however, the Grove Park Inn actually hired a paranormal researcher to officially research the phenomena for the first time in history. Now, as I have discussed with you, the physically deceased are just that. Physically, they have shed their bodies and they have moved to another address. For those of you who still have a hard time grasping this concept, here's something that I suggest to parents when they're trying to talk to their kids about death. What I'll say to them is, okay, if you put a tea kettle on the stove and bring it to a boil, what happens next? Well, the water changes into steam and it leaves the tea kettle. The steam is still H2O. It's just changed to another reality. It's no longer solid. It's now steam. Well, I believe death is like that. So when our physical bodies die, the essence that is us, it's out of here. It takes a flight. So at deathbeds, those sitting with the dying have described over and over again seeing a mist, a gray, blue, or white mist leaving the body. And as I've shared with you, when my father-in-law was passing, my sister and I saw his, it was a silver, misty aura sort of lifting out of his body. And then when he was real close to death, my husband saw a pasty mist beginning to leave his body. My cousin saw a blue-gray mist leave her mother's body when she passed away. So this is not an uncommon occurrence. But once our essence escapes the physical body, do relationships end? So is my relationship over with all those folks, all my relatives on the other side, because they are no longer here in the physical, can I not have a relationship with them anymore? Oh, that's ridiculous. Absolutely not. Here are just a few ways those on the other side try to reach out to us. So for those of us, some of us, we have conversations with the deceased, and that's something I always encourage. Just talk to them the same way you would talk to them if they were here. When I had the apparition in the old house who was scaring my parents, my patients, I was very quick to give him a piece of my mind and tell him he needed to behave, that was really mean and not nice. When the rose smell pops up at my house in Galveston, I always thank her for coming and visiting and ask her to please let me know if there's something that she doesn't like about the house. I don't know if I really want her to tell me because I like the way my house is, but I'm polite. But anyway, from a group called Shadow Speakers, they collect after-death communications. We have this account. Now, this is about telephone calls from the dead. I had a wonderful agent, or an editor, actually, years ago. She was a little English woman, and she was a little Jewish English woman from England. And she really is into the spirit. She gets after-death communications from anybody who passes on. And when her mother died, she got a phone call. It was from her deceased mother. And her mother basically said to her, look, I'm okay, don't worry about me. But anyway, telephone calls from the deceased really do happen. People with a close bond to the deceased will occasionally receive communication via the telephone. I'm not kidding you guys. This is not weird stuff. When this occurs, the voice of the deceased usually sounds the same as it did when the person was alive. But the calls are often, it's sort of like a bad connection with static and line noise. And the phone tends to ring normally, although some report a flat sound to the ring. After a while, the voice of the deceased may grow faint and it disappears. Other times, the deceased simply terminates the phone call and the line may go dead. Some have reported hearing other faint voices in the background, such as those around the deceased at the time. So if I'm going to pass and I have folks on the other side who are going to help me pass, they're already deceased, and they help me pass, and then I use the telephone to make contact with my loved ones on the other side to let them know I'm okay, would it make sense that maybe they might hear those who help me pass with me? Most of these phone calls occur within 24 hours of physical death. Phone calls tend to be shorter when the recipient is aware that the person they're speaking to is deceased physically. Phone calls can be lengthy when the recipient is speaking to a person whom they think is still alive. And I've got some of those accounts in my files. This is mainly because of fear. You know, those loved ones of ours who are on the other side, they don't want to upset us, okay? So if you are carting around with you a fear of things that go bump in the night, that's gonna block you from making contact, believe it or not, because our loved ones, they care about us and they are concerned about us, and so they don't want to do anything to hurt us. So as I have said before, if you have that fear of being startled by a spontaneous apparition or spontaneous contact, ask your deceased loved ones to come to you in a dream. Dreams are a potent form of spirit communication, and they are probably the most common. Many do not realize that the dead are actually contacting them in this way. I mean, I heard an incredible account just the other day down in Asheville from a woman who both of her parents died in a car wreck, and their anniversary actually was yesterday. I think it was in the late 90s. They died in a car wreck. And she was still really upset by this, and she talked about having dreams about them coming to her and telling her that they were all right. And bless her heart, she didn't know that this was contact. She thought these were just dreams, and I said to her, no, they're contacting you. They're still trying to comfort you. And then she shared with me that not long before her parents died in this tragic death, her uncle had cancer and he was getting ready to pass, and she called him and to say goodbye to him, and he said to her, your father will be following me soon. And she said to her uncle, please don't say that. And shortly after that, her father did die in a car accident. But what got me, what really did get to me, is that here she's had this incredible dream. They were just wonderful. And she didn't have any information about after-death communication. She didn't know that that was a common experience. She didn't know that that was a portal for spirit communication. And so I'll be sending her a couple of my books to give her a good reality check. But anyway, several people I've personally known have seen their loved ones waving to them in dreams. My mom recalls seeing her grandmother standing at the back of the hospital waving while surrounded by angels. She woke up and told her parents her grandmother was dead. Her parents had just gotten back from the hospital and knew of her death. The state you are in as you are drifting off to sleep, which is important, between the conscious and unconscious, is an important time for communication. Okay, so right before you're going to sleep, right before you're waking up, this is a time when we most often make contact. Be aware of any whispers or sounds that you may hear before going to sleep. Often, more times than not, these are spirits communicating with you. So, you have a pad and a pencil by your bed so that you can write this stuff down. When you wake up, you write it down. Now, as I said, apparitions can happen. People who are close to their departed loved ones often experience these at one time or another. The deceased will return in a visionary form to give a message of well-being. They're not going to tell you what the lotto number is. Okay? I've had a lot of people ask me that. Well, are they going to come? Are they going to tell me who my next boyfriend is? Or are they going to tell me what the, you know, how to win the lotto? Or they may give little nudges and they may give little hints with regard to personal life issues. And every once in a while, there are after-death communications where, I mean, I have received accounts where the will was lost and in a dream, grandpa comes back and tells somebody where the will is. And I mean, I have gotten some of those. But more often than not, basically what all they want to do is they want to tell you that they're okay. Now, the other thing they might do is they might warn you of danger. That's happened. I've got some accounts of those, too, where a loved one, a deceased loved one, came to a child, an adult child in a dream with a message that they needed to go unplug something underneath a bed. And when they went to go unplug whatever it was they needed to unplug underneath the bed, the wire was fraying and it was sparking. So, yeah, if there's danger, sometimes they'll come too. Or if we're in deep distress, there have been times when I have been really, really upset about something, and I've had visits from my mother. But they usually mean no harm. Okay, I'm going to say that again. When we have visitations from those who are on the other side, they, contrary to what the television shows are telling us, they usually mean us no harm. If it is a vision of a stranger, listen closely to what they are trying to tell you. They may want to warn you of danger. They may also not. Maybe they're a friend of one of our deceased relatives. Some need to come, and they need to just let us know that they're okay. We've also talked about familiar scents. We talked about that last week. Many loved ones may be associated with a certain scent. For example, one of my friend's fathers, he smelled of cigars all the time. Another mother smelled of a certain type of flower, so perfume. So we may get a scent. Oftentimes what happens for me is I have a smell. This is awful. This is how I'm so connected to my grandmother through food. I'll smell German-Russian food when my grandmother wants to get in touch with me. Well, gang, it's been great hanging out with you again from Asheville, North Carolina. As I said, if you're ever in this neck of the woods, you really need to come on up here. You need to come on up here and you need to visit some of the culture and talk to some of the people and go to some of the restaurants and visit some of the places where there's a lot of spirit activity. There's spirit activity even in high schools. Oh, goodness sakes, there was a big bunch of commotion over a high school recently because the high school built something on top of a, I guess they built built it on top of an old Civil War graveyard. And so I guess folks weren't real happy, those in the afterlife weren't real happy about somebody parking something on top of their graves. And so there was a lot of mischief at the high school, paranormal mischief. And for a long time they tried to keep this out of the news. And eventually it not only got into the news, but they had a paranormal researcher show up and start taking a look at some of the activities. I guess the elevator was going up and down by itself. And there were doors slamming all at once. And furniture was being moved around. And just a whole lot of activity. And so that created such a bustle. But, of course, around here, you know, once it did make the news, nobody really cared. People wanted to go and see what was going on. You know, the way I kind of look at that, I guess I just want to end with this. You know, if somebody comes and smashes my window of my car, I'm going to be really, really ticked. So what I'm going to do is I'm probably going to want to find the person who smashed my window. And I'm probably going to want to give them a piece of my mind. Now, the way I look at graves basically are a place for those of us on this side to go make contact. And so what a lot of us will do is we go to the graveyard, we tend to the garden, we tend to the stone. It's our place of contact. So if somebody comes along and desecrates a grave, I mean, they're like desecrating a piece of my property. So I'm going to get really mad. So I'm going to cause some mischief, and I'm going to give them a piece of my mind. It's not that much different, gang. Well, anyway, thank you so much for joining me tonight. Go ahead and have one more piece of pumpkin pie. I won't tell anybody. And remember, if you've had an otherworldly encounter, or if you have a question for me, please visit my website at www.CarlaWillsBrandon.com. And if there is a topic you would really like to hear discussed on A Walk to the Other Side, please let me know. And last week, I know I said that we were going to be talking about religion and after-death communication and near-death experiences and how those can go hand in hand. But then I ended up in the mountains here, and there were just so many great, wonderful paranormal stories. I just really felt like I needed to share them with you. So I promise, in 2 weeks we will discuss religion and the paranormal and how they can walk hand in hand. Good night, sweet dreams. We will talk again.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.